Peter.
Claire, how are you?
Good, thank you. You all right?
I'm good. We'll try this and we'll go from here. So okay. It's another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. For anything you hear on today's show, at Sideshow on Twitter, sideshow.com and facebook.com/TheSideshow. On today's episode, I'm speaking with Claire Greenslade of Hestercombe. We'll get to what that is after this jingle.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Claire, you're very welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast. How are you today, my dear?
Very well, thank you.
For those who are not aware, Claire, can you tell me just what Hestercombe is and maybe give me a little bit of its history going back from, let's say, before I was born?
Okay, so Hestercombe is an independent charity based in Taunton in Somerset, and we are a garden that's open to the public. And what's unique about us, if you like, is that we have three eras of garden history in one place. So we have a Georgian garden, Victorian gardens and Edwardian gardens. Probably we're most famous for having a Gertrude Dugal designed garden.
Now, for those who aren't aware, I came across Gertrude Dugal, and we're sidetracking here slightly in true Peter style, but Gertrude Dugal, was she involved with Edwin Lutyens in this design?
Yes, she was. So basically, he's the architect, so he does all the hard landscaping. And I always describe it like she throws a layer of flowers over the top, because wherever she can put a plant, she does. You know, I'm always surprised that she left any lawn. So they had a very close working relationship together and often designed together.
Because the last I came across Dugal and Lutyens, funnily enough, was, pardon me here for putting my own name into the spotlight. But when I was involved in the design of the 13th century castle in Perone, Château de Perone, better known to you as the Historial de la Grande Guerre, former guest of the shows, plural, Andrew Fisher Tomlin and Basson, well, I represented Ireland, they represented England and Wales, and they designed a Teapfal Memorial, which was, how do I say, it was an ode, or the naming on that was given to Lutyens. But Dugal was, it was noted that she had an involvement in it.
Although I think for her time, she was a tough old cookie. You know, she was a businesswoman. She had her own nursery. She had her own design business. She built a forge in her own garden, so that if she couldn't find the right tool for her, being female, maybe being smaller, she would go and make it. So she was quite a tough old cookie, but I expect press-wise, it would have been Lutyens that was more heard of perhaps at the time.
For those of you who are unaware, Teapfal is probably the largest, it's the most, well, it is synonymous with most of the war memorial gardens he's designed in France. I think the Commonwealth War Graves Commission tell me he's done about 15 or so memorials in total, including one in Dublin. But let's go back to Hestercombe, if we can, Claire. The discovery of Hestercombe, or where did it all sort of start to go wrong? Because to me, it seems to have had this, how do I phrase this? It was sort of like it was, let's say, the Rolling Stones became unheard of for about 30 or 40 years. And all of a sudden, I flick through my granddad's vinyl collection and I pull it out and I play Paint It Black or one of those great classics. And all of a sudden, the world starts to go wild about something that maybe had fallen out of grace. Have I oversold that story a little bit? And if you can, tell me where Philip White starts to come into the picture then, bearing in mind Hestercombe's history.
So after the Second World War is probably the easiest place to start. In the 1950s, Mrs. Portman, who owned the house, she passed away, and the whole estate was passed over to the Crown Estate, so owned by the Queen. And in that time, the Forestry Commission took down all the large trees in the landscape garden, which is the Georgian garden. They felled all the large trees to provide timber to help rebuild Britain. And then they put in quick-growing plantation trees to sort of try and make some money back from the land. In the meantime, Somerset Fire Brigade moved into the house and they had all their 999 calls came here, their fire trucks were here, everything was here. And they kept on a gardener to look after the formal gardens, the ducal part of it, and the Victorian terrace garden. By 1974, however, the sort of stonework and the framework of the garden, the pergola was starting to collapse, the steps were sinking, just with, you know, being 100 years old. And so the fire brigade had a vote, and we have the minutes of this meeting they had a vote as to whether to tarmac over the whole garden and make another training ground for the fire brigade. And the gardens won by just one vote. And that meant that the Somerset County Council, they had to then commit to restoring that part of the garden. And that was all fine and dandy. And then in the 1990s, Philip White he's a local man. He's now my boss, so I'll speak kindly. He's very nice. And he's a local man, and he worked at the time for the Somerset Wildlife Trust. And they had an office in the house at Hestercombe. And so in his lunch hour, you know, he'd heard about the remnants of this estate and he just sort of started poking around. He got permission from the Crown to get trespassers' rights so that he could see what was here. And then he managed to get volunteers to come in and start clearing some of the land. And then unbeknown to his wife and children, he remortgaged his house so that he could make this project happen. So it's quite a recent restoration, if you like. So it's been really interesting to work here and be part of that.
How dilapidated were they, Claire?
Well, the pond wasn't a pond. You could walk over it. They removed 17,000 tonnes of silt from that pond. We have a waterfall, a cascade, and that had completely silted up. So they had to find it first and try and figure out where it was. All of the buildings that were in the garden were falling apart or collapsed or covered in brambles. So it's been a big job and it's ongoing. We're in the middle of a building job at the moment to build one more temple that is written about in journals. And then we've got a hermitage and a little kitchen to support another building that we've got to build still. So it's ongoing.
For those of you listening at home, I know, even if you take my own garden, which is about an acre, the hedgerows were overgrown, the trees were nothing, the hedges had become trees. It was a sort of a nothingness, and it does take time to get things back in. And as sure as you put out one fire, another one, I take fire, but another one sort of starts. And it is the beauty of horticulture and gardening that it's not preserved entirely in formaldehyde, which is a funny way to describe it if you're, I'm sidetracking here, but just bear with me. But if you've been to the old natural history museums, everything is just kept in its pure state. But gardens, once they go, if it's stonework, if it's driveways, if it's an old golf course, give it a year and a half, and it is just an entire change of a landscape. So let me then take it to this level, because you didn't, from what I can gather, sort of sit on your laurels in any way. And I want to take you to the point at which you then went and acquired another 320 acres from the Crown Estate. Before Claire answers that, for those of you listening at home, the last time the Sideshow had a reference to the Crown Estate, which is the gardens and land owned by the Queen, but managed and run by a company on her behalf, was when we spoke with John Anderson. And John Anderson is over, amongst many other places, the Queen's private gardens, the Savile Gardens, etc., etc. So if you want to go back and listen to that, it will give you a little bit of a better insight into how all of that part works. But in a nutshell, Claire, Hestercombe has officially bought land from the Queen. How do you even do that?
Well, we've just grabbed an opportunity, really. This is very recent news. The estate that I was working on before Christmas was about a 100-acre estate. And about 42 acres of that is garden. The rest is woodland, grassland management, that kind of thing. And the whole Hestercombe Garden sits within a farm currently, and that farm was part of the estate. And after the Second World War, once Mrs. Portman had died, all the land was split up. So recently, the Crown Estates have been selling lots of farm land in Somerset to reinvest the money elsewhere, I believe. And so the opportunity came up for us to be able to buy the farmland around, which is amazing for us because we've been leasing the landscape garden. So all the time we're doing this restoration, it's just on a lease. And it just completely reinstates the estate back to how it was. It safeguards the whole estate. I mean, we have a tenant farmer who will still carry on tenant farming for now, but it just means that in the future we can make the rest of the land around us look much more like the parkland that it was, and put in all the old drives and the old rides around the estate. So it's really exciting.
And let me take this a slight bit of a different way. When maybe 10 years ago, I was involved, but did redesign or design, I'll clarify myself here, my apologies. It was a 17th century estate on about 27 acres that I was the designer of. And I remember at the time speaking with the media, and the first thing I said to them was, look, the estate had never officially been designed, or designs had never been completed. One, two, in trying to get that design to completion with the client, one, to take into consideration maintenance and maintenance costs, times, manner, units. The easiest way to say it, Claire, is that it was designed with a 17th century landscape in mind. I had none that I could replicate, and what would have been the point of that, because it never existed in the first place. But in a nutshell, we, I suppose, took into consideration modern day methods, modern day planting, and we were entirely and extremely considerate of what it would have been at the time. Does that sit correctly with you, and is what you're doing at Hestercombe and what you have done and what it is to be as well, is that how you would look at it?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I don't really like the term museum garden because, like you say, it makes it sound like it's like stuck in assets. But the so we're very lucky in that there's only been two main families that have been on the estate. So the gardens haven't been overlaid with different planting through time. So, for example, when you walk through the landscape garden, you won't find copper beeches and rhododendrons and azaleas because when the garden was designed, they simply hadn't reached, if they were reaching the country at that point, they certainly hadn't reached Somerset by that point. So we're very, we're quite purist in a way with the planting. So we only use plants that would have been around in the 1750s when the garden was designed. With the Jekyll garden, we're extremely lucky that all of Jekyll's designs and plans were found in a potting shed in the garden. So we've been able to replant the garden almost like painting by numbers, you know, exactly how Jekyll would have seen it. And for some people, I think that could be really difficult to work with because you could think that your creativity is stolen with it, or that, you know, Jekyll would have planted with new plants, or she would have changed with the times, etc. But I think we just kind of feel that we're so lucky to have these designs that actually it's a really nice experience for people to be able to walk into a 3D version of one of these designs. So we are a bit of a stickler for detail with history.
Have you been allowed at any point in time to, vary off? And I'll give you a funny one. I remember being in the Botanic Gardens once, and I was talking to the head don, let's call him that. And I said sort of things that maybe get on your nerves. And he said, when people walk in and say to me, oh, it's just as I remember it. He said they might have got their wedding photographs taken here 50, 60 years ago. And he said, I try and explain to them, it's never as you remember it. The trees were 10 foot tall. They became 50 foot tall, and they were felled in the meantime between what was 40, 50 years ago and what is now. So he said there's a sort of an evolutionary thing that happens naturally with gardens and with plants, even trying to keep a line of lavenders and changing the variety because that one did or didn't work out. Or, as he rightly put it, sometimes in the 1750s or in the 1850s, the designer actually got it a little bit wrong. even though people might be hesitant to put that in writing because the greats are invariably just that, and we hold them as that, and rightly so. Do you allow for that a little bit of adaptation to the landscape and what the landscape is to become in that future, Claire?
We've had to a bit with Jekyll's garden. For example, in her plans, she uses a variegated maze. And we are very badger heavy, I would say, in Somerset. So wherever we put maize in, the garden gets decimated. So instead, we've chosen other variegated plants to use in its place. You know, I sort of agree. Like, we don't think that Gertrude Jekyll ever came here. So she often designed remotely. She certainly never gardened here. And I'm sure if she was looking down on me, she might be saying about certain plants, you know, why on earth is she persevering with that plant when it just doesn't like it there? So there's sometimes little tweaks that we have to do, or sometimes almost like anti-gardening. Say, for example, she has a planting plan for all of the walls as well, and she puts asphodel lines into the walls, which is great. You know, they look beautiful, but after about 4 or 5 years, their roots, the tap roots, get so big that they blow the wall apart. So you end up as a kind of maintenance thing, kind of growing them in there for 4 years, then killing them off and planting the next lot in. You know, it sort of verges on ridiculous at times, but it keeps you on your toes. It's just a very different way of gardening. Long term with the whole estate, we would love to take some of it back. So, for example, there was a different driveway into the estate that was a much more of this kind of classic S-shaped kind of bend through the parkland. There were loads more trees, so we'd love to put some of that back in. Some things we'll never get again, like when the land was split after the Second World War, Heskham had a Lutyens designed kitchen garden, and that's actually been sold off and somebody else owns that. So there's little bits we might never get back, but we'll keep trying.
Claire, take me a little bit back into your own side of things. What and how did you end up where you are now? Did you work in garden centres? Did you study horticulture? It's quite a, how do you say it? If you were in a pub and you met me at the bar and I said, well, what do you do for a living? And you say, well, I'm the head honcho at Hestercombe. It's a pretty fancy, wonderful title and something that really stands out a little bit. It jumps off the page. There's no question about that.
Well, I started off with a degree in fashion and textiles, which I think really helps with gardening. It definitely helps with understanding Jekyll, because that was her background was similar. All of that kind of design work went towards computer-aided design. And that was the one thing I knew I didn't want to do, was sit in front of a computer. I've always been very hands-on. And so I got a job designing and making stained glass windows in Bristol, which was great, but it was always 3 days a week. I was always waitressing to keep the money in. And I went back to college for a half-day course to learn how to teach adults. And I thought I could teach stained glass and make stained glass, life sorted. And while I was there, I noticed out the corner of my eye, there was an advert up for an organic gardening course. And I used to go to the Windmill Hill City Farm quite a lot in Bristol, mainly because it had a nice cafe. And a friend and I talked about having an allotment there. So I thought, oh, well, I'll do that course and see what it's like. And, you know, after about 2 weeks, it was clear I didn't really want to teach. And I loved the gardening aspect. So I volunteered at Rington Garden, which is just outside Bristol, which was a walled vegetable garden. And then I got on, the National Trust used to run a course called the Careership, which was a 3-year apprenticeship. And you were based in one garden. I was based at Barrington Court near Ilminster in Somerset. And while you're there, you get your RHS, you get all your MVQs, you get your tractor driving, your spraying certificates, like a brilliant course. So I completed that and had a fabulous 3 years there. And then I went to Rice and Organic Garden in Coventry. I was there for a year, and that was great training because there's sort of 20 trials gardens, if you like, to show different organic techniques. And every gardener was in charge of 3 or 4 of those. So it was a great way to learn how to manage a space. And then a job came up here at Hesticum as a gardener, and I managed to get that job. And I've just worked my way up, I suppose. I've been here about 10 years now, so seen a lot of changes.
Were you there, Claire, before? I'll try and just get this correctly, but were you there before Philip White decided to take over what were then described to me as entirely dilapidated? And have you seen that transition, or did you come in partway through?
Partway through. So I've seen some of it. And I've seen three new buildings go into the landscape garden. I'm just watching the fourth go in and helping to manage that. And obviously I'm going to stay and see what happens to the developing farmland as well. So it is really, when I first came here, I was literally a gardener in the Jekyll Gardens. And I thought, after 2 years, you know, I'm going to get bored of this because the plans are all laid out. It's going to become like housekeeping. And I have never been more wrong in my life.
Let me bring you to a different side of it then, Claire, because irrespective of whether it's speaking with, again, former guests at Bet Chatto's Gardens, the one thing I remember from that interview was the note that gardens need to take in money. It doesn't matter how big, how small they may be, but the money is required. And sometimes it can be a little bit of a chicken and an egg thing on, we need money to restore the gardens. Well, the people won't come in until the gardens look cool and sexy, vibrant and full, and as they rightly so should be. How much is it to go and visit Hestercombe, or is a better way to ask that, how does Hestercombe manage to pay the bills and keep the gardens looking as it should be?
I mean, obviously, that's a really delicate balance. We have about 80,000 visitors a year now, and about a quarter of our income comes from that. So we make the rest of our money. We have a cafe and a restaurant on site. We do somewhere between 40 and 60 weddings a year. We have events, we have conferences. In the house, we have a contemporary art gallery, which has so far been all Arts Council England funded. So that brings in quite a different sort of clientele to come and have a look around. And then the rest of it, we try as much as we can to get funding for, you know, absolutely anything and everything. We've got a funding request out at the moment to help restore an old prop house so that we can do more propagation and sell more plants in the shop. We've also got, we're about to put in a massive planning application for the house, because the house is Grade 2 listed, but it's very institutionalised. There's nothing of its originality in there, furniture-wise. So there's no point, we don't feel, in us restoring it to an old Victorian house. You can see that in lots of other places. So we're very much using it as a reclaimed space. And we feel that the sort of common link for us here is that Bamfield, who designed the landscape garden in the 1750s, was primarily an artist. Jekyll, who designed the formal gardens, was also primarily an artist who turned to garden design later. So we love this link with art and landscape. And all of the artwork that is in the contemporary art gallery is based on that. So our plan is to try and get permission to sort of knock out the middle of this higgledy-piggledy house and try and make a bigger performance space, and in the laundry rooms at the back to have artist studios for visiting international artists to come and make work inspired by Hestercombe or inspired by the landscape. So it's that's our next sort of ventures, but that will all be, we'll be looking for funding for most of those sort of projects.
I want to ask you a question that I also asked John Anderson, and it's on a couple of levels. For those who have never been to Hestercombe, one, how beautiful is it? Two, is there a best time of the year to visit? And three, if I am going there with the, I'm unsure, Claire, you'll have to bear with me on Peter's journey through his a bit of a daydreamy mind, but let's say the love of my life who is in a movie and is obviously fictitious and doesn't really exist, but I'm going there to get down on one knee and ask her to spend the rest of her life with me. It's Sharon Stone in this case, let's call it. How, when, what do I do? How much do I need? what can I do when I am there? Can I have a cup of tea? Is there a tea rooms? How much time would I need to spend there?
It is beautiful. I think you'd need, at a bare minimum, you'd need 3 hours. I would take the whole day because it is vast. We have a beautiful tea room that overlooks the garden. So you can sit there and watch us all work. The best time to visit is every day, but the best time for the formal gardens, the gardens were designed as a summer garden because this was the Portman family summer house, if you like. So the formal gardens that Jekyll designed are pretty much best June, July, August through to September, I'd say. But having said that, the landscape gardens are just stunning all year round. At the moment, it is just carpeted in daffodils. After that, it will be carpeted in bluebells. Then we get the campions, the foxgloves, and then it all dies down. So I'd say there's something beautiful to see all of the time. But if you're a real horticulturalist, I would say the summer would be the best time to see the Jekyll garden. If you were going to get down on one knee, the cascade is really stunning. It's like a beautiful little glade with then this like heavy waterfall behind it, and it's quite secluded, quite romantic. But also along the pergola is beautiful. It's all roses, vines, honeysuckles, with great views out onto the Blackdown Hills. It's a beautiful location where we are. We've got the Quantock Hills behind us, Blackdown Hills ahead of us, and yet we're only 4 miles away from Taunton, so we're quite ideally situated. If you came here, I would go round the landscape garden first, which would easily take you an hour and a half, 2 hours to walk round. Then I would take lunch in the house overlooking the gardens. We've got a secondhand bookshop to visit. We have the contemporary art exhibition to visit. And then I would go round the formal gardens. That will take you a good hour. And then you can take afternoon tea back in the cafe.
That's pretty impressive. I don't really like talking about weddings, if I'm very honest with you, Claire. Weddings, shopping, anything to do with anything along those lines, probably not my forte, and I'll put it down to my male and also Irish genes. It's just something that doesn't work too well. But I've got a picture in my head at this moment in time of a sort of a Cathy and Heathcliff. I'm back to it again, and I can't seem to get away from that. A little bit of a cliche at this moment in time. Is my mind heading in the right direction, Claire, based on what you've just said to me?
Yeah, I'd say so. It's a really romantic garden.
For those of you listening at home, Hestercombe, well, don't worry about that. If you're on the road, if you're in Salt Lake City, if you're in London and you're on the underground and you're listening to this, do you call it the tube or the underground? I'm unsure. One of those trains that moves in a specific direction anyway, and you're stuck, just send me a note at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/thesideshow, sideshow.com, and we'll put you directly in touch with the team at Hestercombe. I'm looking forward to getting to see it hopefully this year once we get over a little bit of a thing that we have to do in a show in Cardiff and that garden's relocation to East Sussex. But once I get that out of the way, then it's on my hit list. In the meantime, Claire, who is the... Claire, are you the head gardener? Is that the title they've given you?
That is my title.
What were you beforehand? You were just a gardener, now you're the head gardener.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Okay, I don't mean to say just a gardener, but you were a gardener, you've now, okay, we have that. But Claire Greenslade is the head gardener at Hestercombe, and it really has. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Claire. Will you keep in touch, Claire? You might just give me a shout and come back on, let me know when the next bit of a news part of the story starts to change with the garden so we can let the listeners know, if that's okay.
Yes, of course, definitely, we'd love to.
Excellent. Pleasure, Claire. For you listening at home, what can I say? Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Chat soon. Take care. Bye.